The following program is being broadcast on the Amazing Women of Power, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International. This show contains motivational language and may not be suitable for negative listeners.
Dreams. I've had enough of these annoying and distracting schemes. I'll choose my friends because apparently they're choosing me. The time is now to pay attention to my destiny.
From his humble studio in Orange County, California, comes a young songwriter with a dream, encouraging others to go after their dreams. Learning from the best in the business and passing it along to you, it's Strong Rider on the radio.
I had the blues, but I made it better, baby. And that's why I wrote this song. And now you can sing along. My mind's made up. My mind's made up. My mind's made up. My mind's made up.
Hey, my mind's made up. To keep my head positive and to keep associating with those who are walking in the same direction as I am, the positive path. Welcome to the show. My name is Dean Olson, and you are listening to Strong Rider on the radio, helping songwriters stay musically fit, learning from the best in the business, and passing it along to you, because that is the way I like to conduct my show. We're going to learn a little bit about our next guest who is walking that path, the path of faith. His name is J.D. Miller. He is a recording artist, multiple award winner, international evangelist, movie orchestrator, singer, songwriter, and producer. And he's on my show, and there's a lot to get into, so I'm going to see you on the other side. So here is our interview, J.D. Miller.
Kentucky Fried Chicken, we do chicken.
Along, what do you see? A tasty new offer from Mickey D's. Get a Big Mac or a McDLT. A McChicken sandwich for the pound of the cheese. Only 99 cents when you buy large fries and Coke. It's the real value, no joke. Show me at the Arches, you know the one. It's the down the real value. Food, folks, and fun.
Cars, trucks, fans, you gotta understand, Maxwell's got the deals.
Commonwealth, Ford, Lincoln, Mercury, the price is right. Come to Bud Rolls, use auto sales, and drive away happy, drive away happy.
Hey, let me tell you where the action's at. It's happening at Sensual Pontiac.
There's a new
It is really a pleasure for me to introduce you to a real pro in the music biz. Mr. J.D. Miller. Over the last 30 years, his repertoire is very rounded, from his reputation as a top musical arranger and producer to a songwriter to a highly acclaimed jingle writer, a craft which has bestowed on Mr. Miller over 50 advertising awards. And I'm guessing his most important endeavor is his passion for the ministry. And by the way, he has also written gospel songs performed by the top Christian artists of the day. I want to extend a warm welcome to J.D. Miller. How are you, sir?
Great. Hey, thanks for calling and give us the opportunity to talk to you today.
Well, I'll tell you what. You're obviously a busy man. I've seen your resume and your schedule. Took a while to get a hold of you, but I really appreciate you taking the time to visit with me today.
It's my pleasure.
Where do I start? Only scratch the surface of what you've been doing, your accomplishments. I guess we'll start from where everyone else does. You were born at an early age, I suppose?
Close to my mother. That's right. I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, and started playing piano when I was about 5.
Oh, my gosh.
And just had a show and tell one day in kindergarten. I forgot my diorama. And they had a piano, and I've been listening to TV things, you know, Leave it to Beaver and I Love Lucy and stuff like that. I was able to pick them out on the antique piano we had, you know, when we lived with my uncle. And so at the last desperate ditch there, I went over to the piano and played some of those. And my kindergarten teacher called my mom and says, Ms. Miller, we need to talk.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so then I was fortunate to be enrolled in the Conservatory of Music there in Cincinnati when I was a little kid and started taking lessons then.
Kind of hard to imagine your life before music, huh? If you started doing that stuff at 5.
It's just always been a wonderful gift that God just put in my hands and in my head and heart, and it's been a great tool, and it's just served me so well.
Does it run in the family? Did parents or relatives play?
Both my parents were musical. My mother, you know, it's funny, when I was a kid, my mother used to sing around the house, you know. And I heard a Judy Garland record one day, and I thought it was my mom. She sounded so much like Garland, Somewhere Over the Rainbow thing. And my dad was a sax player, and he loved to sing. And they got a record player when I was a little kid, you know, for Christmas. And I had Roy Rogers and Disney records. And it's always been part of our heritage is music.
That's great. So how did you decide to hone this talent that sort of you had been blessed with? Did you go to school and take classes, go through the usual junior high and high school doing that kind of thing? And
sure. I mean, you know, we were in choir, and I was in marching band and concert band and ensembles. My brother and sister and I sang together. My dad was a minister, and during the summers we would travel. He would do evangelistic crusades. Back then they would go on for 2 weeks, so you'd be somewhere, you know, in a tent for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And we had a station wagon, a trailer, like so many people, and a PA system. And my dad was really our coach and helped us learn how to arrange and blend and all those things. So I give a lot of the credit to my dad and his desire for us to serve with him.
Where are your parents today? Are they still around?
They are. I'm so blessed, man. They were in Florida for over 30 years ministering there. And about a year and a half ago, they moved in with me from Florida. My parents are now 80 years old.
Wow.
And my dad, you know, they bought the house, then right behind me, it became available shortly after they moved in. And they live, I mean, just across the fence. I have to do their mowing and wash their car and fix their computer.
Yeah.
we're so close. And my dad ministers even today at age 80. He is a senior minister at Berea Christian Church in Lexington, Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm his associate. And as long as he's alive, we're going to be doing that, you know.
Oh,
but it's a great blessing to get to serve with him.
How many brothers and sisters do you have? Do you have just the brother? Or?
Our brother and sister and I sang together. I've got a sister older than me and a brother just a couple years younger, so we were all close to the same age. And my dad had us travel with him, and he was doing tent revivals, crusades around the southeastern part of the state. And so in the summers, when we got out of school, we'd hop in the station wagon and pull in the trailer and had a little PA system. And back then, revivals went for 2 weeks at a time. So we'd be someplace real for a couple of weeks. And my dad helped us learn how to arrange and to blend and those kind of things. So,
oh, okay. So
it's a real blessing to get to do that.
Well, that's great. Not many people can have that story where you're blessed to have everybody in the family working and ministering together and praying together. You know, that's, I don't know how else to put it. It's just a good thing.
It is. It's a blessing. You put it right the first time.
Yeah.
It really is. That's the best way to say it.
So after high school, did you go for any other type of endeavor or a career choice, or did you know exactly what you want to do right from the get-go, go into college or go into some kind of training?
My dad wanted me to go to college and get into the ministry. And I had an opportunity to travel and play as a performer right out of high school, and I thought I would just do it for the summer. And then I had like 7 scholarships to go to college and even Bible college. And had committed to going, and I was having so much fun and making good money and traveling, and I just kind of thought, well, I'll wait a year. And then I just never got back to it, you know. Yeah. One thing led to another. I had great opportunities to start recording, you know, playing on people's projects, and then I became a producer, kind of by default. The guy didn't show up one day, and the guy said, I'll pay you double if you'll help me. And I found out I could do that, and then went from that to writing songs, and then writing jingles, and then working in the film industry, writing music for film. So one thing led to another.
Wow. That's something I almost am envious of, but it takes some... that's a lot of plates to spin, but you've succeeded at them quite well, haven't you?
I've been very blessed. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
Yeah, but you don't have to be so humble. I've seen what you've, I've seen what's written about you, at least on your site. You know, you could have written that, but.
Yeah, no. Well, I think they were all music related.
Yeah.
And one thing is to see opportunities and then have the courage to step into them. I think. If anything was my part, that had to be my part of it. But God provided, you know, the tools and then the opportunities and even the incentive to follow through on it. And I've had a lot of encouragement, too, from people that were professionals that said, you can do this. Come on, you know, and we'll help you. People like Bill Gaither, for instance. He and Gloria are two of the most humble, generous, you know, just beautiful people. They've helped not only me, but hundreds of people in the Christian music industry and quietly, you know, behind the scenes sort of thing. They don't demand a lot of attention for what they've done. I was with them for 13 years as a writer and working in their studios and playing on the road with them.
Oh, fantastic.
And got to observe them from a lot of different angles. And they're every bit the real deal, you know?
Tell me how you ended up meeting the Gaithers.
Well, I was working in Louisville, Kentucky for a production company, and I had started writing music I played volunteer at church on Sundays in Lexington, Kentucky, a large church there called Southam Christian Church. Mm-hmm. And praise music was just coming into vogue, I guess you'd say. We had a praise team, which was kind of new back then.
Mm-hmm.
This is in the early 80s. And I wrote a song for our praise team that, quite frankly, got rejected.
Really?
But I had done a production on it. I was producing jingles back then, and when we had extra time in the studio, I would pay the singers and the performers a little bit extra if they'd do a demo for me. So I had a perfect, you know, opportunity there to create really first-class demos. And I had three or four of those thrown onto a cassette. I played a wedding for a guy named Jim Hill. Jim Hill wrote What a Day That Will Be. He was with the Golden Keys, and he was with the Stamps Quartet. He was a gospel legend even back then. And we did a wedding together. Someone hired me to play for him to sing. And after the wedding, we just sat around the piano and sang good old gospel songs like we had since we were kids.
Uh-huh.
And we swapped songs. I played him a couple of things I'd written. He said, man, those are pretty good. He says, you have a copy of those? And I happen to have a cassette in my car. And I gave it to him. Forgot all about it. And in just a few weeks later, I was producing a piece of music, I think for Chevron. And it was a, you know, big production. It was kind of a tense day for me. And, I was in the middle of the recording studio. I told my secretary, please don't interrupt. We've got just so much time to get this done today. She said, okay, I won't let it's really important. And you know what happened? 5 minutes into the session, the phone rings, and I pick up the phone, and I said, what is it? She said, there's a guy on the phone that says he's Bill Gaither, and he needs to talk to you right now. Well, I thought it was one of my friends playing a joke on me, because I never met Bill or anybody in his organization, you know, but I knew who he was, And there's no way Bill Gates would be calling me out of the blue, you know?
Sure.
And so I picked up the phone and I said, I don't know who this is, but this is not funny. I'm busy. And I hung up. And what I didn't know was Jim Hill had taken that cassette, to Bill Gates and got him in his convertible up there in Indiana and drove him through the country and said, listen to this guy's songs and give him a chance. And so that Bill was calling me to do that. And in that tense moment, I just had no idea he'd be calling, you know?
Yeah, what a rascal,
so,
huh?
So I hung up, and he called back 5 minutes later, and she put him through again. I still didn't believe it was him. And so I said, look, I don't know who this is, but it's not funny. But I said, well, you give me your number, and whoever you are, I'll call you back when I'm not busy. And I hung up. Well, guess who it was? It really was Bill.
Wow.
And he was so gracious, you know, when I called back, and I tried to apologize all over myself. He's no. He says, look, Gloria and I stay busy too. We understand. Look, that's why we're calling you, because you're good at what you're doing. We want to write with you. And they extended the invitation. And before long, we had written over 30 songs together. And,
holy cow.
And then we got more involved. He said, hey, why don't you get on the road with us? We'll be able to write more. And that kind of thing. So we just kind of developed a relationship.
That is incredible.
At their invitation.
Wow, what a great, thank you very much. That's, that is, and you've become, you've stayed good friends over the time, huh?
We have remained friends, and we got to a point in the relationship, they were growing and they were doing more and more, and I had a family, my mother-in-law lived with us at the time, and she had been diagnosed with a brain tumor, and I needed to be home.
Sure.
And so we agreed, you know, that it was the best thing for my family and us to do, was for them to find somebody else. And there was a young man named Anthony Berger that was just dying to do what I was doing. And he was a good friend of mine. He was a great, great guy and a much better player than I was.
Uh-huh.
And so Bill and I sat down and we said, you know, who do we want to get to take my place? And I, you know, we both knew Anthony was. So we invited him to come out on the road with us the weekend before I left. And we, you know, we talked and said, if you're interested, come and try it out. And man, he fit like glue. He was totally different kind of performer than I was.
Right.
My job was to be the accompanist. You never knew I was there. You know, Bill would start playing something and he'd walk away from the piano and I was supposed to pick up right where he left off so that people didn't notice he wasn't playing anymore. So I had to play like Bill. and Anthony was a showman. I mean, and that's what, you know, that was his forte. I mean, people noticed him and he was an amazing player. So they just played that up even more when he came into the group, and he became an icon then with the Gator Vocal Band.
Wow.
Until he passed away. And
wow.
He was on I'm sure you know that story.
Yeah.
Where he was on a cruise ship and was playing We Shall Behold Him, and then he fell into the piano and he did behold it.
Oh, I actually didn't know that. That's interesting. Wow.
Yeah. It was a touching, really moving thing, but so appropriate for a guy like Anthony.
Yeah, but these little serendipities and these building blocks that, or the stepping stones that go, you know, this, it's, you know, for those of us who are believers that, you know, that there's somebody has a very, light touch and a hand in this.
Absolutely.
But that's a wonderful story. I, since you happen to be talking about, you said that you were writing jingles at the time. That's something that you're pretty noted for, I noticed. That you've done quite a bit of that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny because there's a football player that started doing one of the first things I ever did was Nationwide's On Your Side.
Uh-huh.
And there's this guy named Peyton Manning that plays for the Denver Broncos. I don't know if you ever heard of him. Or
not, yes, I did hear of him. I read him about him in the paper.
Super Bowl ring or two. He's a. Have you seen the commercials where he's singing the Nationwide jingle? And he's
yes, I did.
The words.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got a lawsuit against him. He didn't ask me if he'd change the words of that, you know. And he's not that good a singer. I'm just kidding. But that's brought us a lot of even, you know, new attention to jingles.
So you're pulling my leg. That didn't happen. Okay, gotcha.
What's that?
You're pulling my leg. He's not. You're not suing this guy.
We're not suing anybody. No. That jingle was a buyout back in the early 70s when we first did it. They just paid one fee and they owned everything. And so I don't get anything for that. People ask me that all the time. Well, aren't you getting rich? No. They bought that a long time ago. They were just a regional company back when we did that in three states.
Uh-huh.
In Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. And of course, they grew quickly.
Yeah. That's how they all do, huh? Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, jingles. It was funny. I was producing a record in a studio, and there was a guy that produced jingles out of that studio there in Kentucky. And this ad agency guy came in, and he was desperate. It was Friday night. And he had promised one of his clients a jingle on Saturday morning. And the guy that normally did it was gone. He was even out of the country. And so the guy that owned the studio said, why don't you go talk to that skinny kid over there? I said, maybe he can get some for you. And the guy was desperate. He said, you know what? If you can produce a jingle for me by noon tomorrow and get it on the UK ball game network, he says, I'll pay you $600 cash. And that was about double what I was getting for producing the album.
That sounds great. Yeah.
And so we did it in 6 hours, and I made more money, you know, in 3 hours than I'd ever made in my life.
That's fantastic.
Know, by the hour, so to speak. And so it was really easy. And I then called a couple of friends of mine, that own businesses and said, hey, I'll do a jingle for free if you'll let me do it for you. And if you like what I do, you use it. And so we built a demo, a reel, you know.
Uh huh.
This one thing led to another. Before I knew it, we were doing national stuff for McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Wow.
I used to record Colonel Sanders. He had sold his business to John Y. Brown Jr., who turned it into a franchise.
Sure.
But they had signed Harlan Sanders, Colonel Sanders, to a contract that he would do radio spots. And they lived right there where our studio was.
Uh-huh.
So we used to do his radio spots for KFC, even before I was doing jingles.
Are you talking about when Colonel Sanders was still around? And
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that'd be in the 70s, maybe, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, and he was a great guy. He was always kind of, sounded kind of gruff and grumpy, but once you got to know him, he was just a teddy bear, you know?
Wow.
But that was a lot of fun.
Wow. So what was the first jingle you ended up writing? Do you remember that? Or
I do.
Uh-huh.
It was kind of a weird thing because it was called Regent Energy Coal Corporation. They're in Lexington, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did, they bought coal from the coal mines and they sold it to utility companies. Really, a really extremely narrow niche. And they wanted, it was a public relations campaign for them because they wanted people to know who they were. They weren't really looking for customers, but they needed good public relations.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had a slogan called, we're helping you cash in on coal, which is not easy to sing, really. And it made the jingle even harder, but it was there in Kentucky, and I was thinking cash and coal and, you know, that Eastern Kentucky kind of country feeling.
Yeah.
And we had a friend that could sing just like Johnny Cash. And so I thought, if we put Johnny Cash like voice on this and sing cash in on coal, maybe it'll catch. And it won an award that year at the advertising, the local, Lexington, Kentucky Advertising Association. So we got some notoriety from it, and people walked around singing it. And so that was the first one we did.
Fantastic. You mentioned McDonald's, and McDonald's has gone with so many different jingles that are recognizable, especially the one that's going on right now. What was the one you got into?
I think the first thing we did for McDonald's was Good Time, Great Taste.
Okay, I remember that. Yeah.
See ya? Good Time, uh-huh. Great Taste. And then we did...
And the thing is that you know, they've been so successful, but some of them are forgettable because, you know, you can go do a search on YouTube and they'll play you some old commercials off TV and, you go like, I don't even remember that one. And I was around for that.
We did, breakfast morning meeting, was another thing that we did for them. I remember we did a jingle for them. They were trying pizza called McPizza, and it was back when the movie Amadeus had come out.
Yeah, I remember McPizza.
Yeah, and so they wanted us to write a jingle with that da 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 McPizza, 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 McDonald's kind of thing. And the bad news is, the jingle was fun, but the bad news is pizza never caught on with McDonald's.
Right.
So they never did it. So there's a couple things that we did that never got out there.
Sometimes the jingle's more successful than the product. Yeah.
Yeah, but we did also, I think the most successful campaign we did was called McDonald's Today. That was the hook. And,
okay.
You know, everything built around that. So I remember doing at least 3 campaigns for McDonald's that ran.
Wow. That's pretty good. Those are big chains. Now, is this radio spots that you're doing?
It was radio and television.
Oh, okay, both. Okay, got it.
We would write a jingle, and then we would create radio spots for them, and then we would work with them. When they did a television thing, they'd send it to us, and we'd re-enhance the audio and, you know, you put the jingle in, we're a bit fed and that kind of thing.
So how did these come to you? Are you working for an agency, or are you an independent musician?
I I started locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and with local advertising agencies, you know, and I was just fascinated by the business. And I met a guy that had been doing it a long time. He did the Jolly Green Giant, Ho, 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 you know that?
Yeah.
Jingle. And we were competing one day, one of the corporate things they kind of bring you in, and everybody brings a little back then cassette deck, you know, and play them your idea, and then the one that wins goes home and does it kind of thing. And I met this guy. His name was Gene Purling. He had a group called the High Lows in the 50s and 60s. And
wow.
He arranged for people like Frank Sinatra and Manhattan Transfer used his arrangements, Take Six, Stevie Wonder. I mean, the guy was just a legend. And we met one day at one of these little meetings, and he invited me to his studio there in Chicago. Got to know him. He had a group then called Singers Unlimited. And he just kind of lost interest in everything else but that group. And he was an amazing arranger. So he encouraged me a lot in the jingle business. And he introduced me, because he wasn't so interested in doing as much, he started turning people on to, you know, to calling me instead of him doing it. So it's just things like that where people help each other. Some of the people I've worked with in local agencies grew. And as they would grow to larger agencies, they'd remember the work we did together. And they'd kind of drag me with them. So that's kind of how it grew.
We don't have to talk all day about your jingle stuff, but you've been deep into that for a while, haven't you?
I did it for 26 years.
And, wow!
Just between you and me, it got to I was no longer doing music; I was entertaining the corporate clients, and I got really discouraged, you know, with the things I would have to do just to keep clients.
Wow!
And so I got to a point; it was absolutely zero fun. And so I actually went to a church, a local church. I'd served volunteer at for 14 years, and they offered me the opportunity to be the music director at the church for $25,000 a year, which is about considerably less than I was making at the time. But I was making really good royalties. I had traveled with Kenny Rogers and some other people, and different people had recorded my music. I was making good royalty money, so I could afford actually to make less money.
Wow.
As a salary.
Yeah.
And minister more. So we said yes.
I wonder if you could still do that today. The royalty monies have not been what they used to do. Of course, the whole business has been turned. Yeah. Business has been turned upside down. A lot of things aren't the way they were. You know, some stay the same, some don't.
But you know what? I've learned that the Holy Spirit's that way.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it says that the Holy Spirit was hovering and moving. And a friend of mine, who's a wonderful minister, Boyce Moulton in Joplin, Missouri. He's in his late 70s now. He's kind of like my spiritual mentor. But he told me one time, he says, when's the last time you got a letter from the First Church in Jerusalem?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the Holy Spirit keeps moving. He doesn't just stay in one place. And so that's one way you know you're in God's will. If it's constantly transient, it, you know, we look for security in this life. And I think God's all about adventure and creation and, you know, something new. It says he gives us a new song and a new day and a new life. So I think that's normal.
No, I love that. Yeah. I am enjoying this so much, but we're still, I haven't even gotten to everything I wanted to talk to you. Would you mind coming back and we talk some more about, maybe talk a little bit more about your jingles, but I have so much more to ask you. Would you mind coming back?
I'd be glad to. I want to thank you for what you do, for you know, spreading the word in the unique way you do it,
allowing us
to be part of it today. Thanks so much.
Okay, great. You know, you can go visit J.D. Meller's website. It is spelled out. It is not the initials J.D. It is J-A-Y-D-E-E Miller.com, and you can learn out all about him. And for crying out loud, go buy his product. Keep him going so he can do what he's doing. You know, you don't want him living in his car doing this stuff. Yeah.
That's right.
Anyway, thanks a lot,
so
JD. We'll be back to you. So thanks again.
Bless you.
Okay.
Thanks. Now there is a man who sounds like he loves what he's doing. That is JD Miller. You can visit him, as I said before in the interview, www.jaydeemiller. That spells JD Miller. Go check out his music and more. There is a lot more on that site than just offering CDs for sale and samples of his jingles. There's plenty more to that. I'm talking about his ministry, and we're going to be talking about that next time, because guess what? He is coming back. J.D. Miller, next time on Strong Rider on the Radio. I really do appreciate all of you who are listening to this program, and you can listen to past episodes by going to www.strongwriter.com. Spelled like songwriter, except it's strongwriter. Get it? Okay. And by the way, please join me on Facebook. I really would love to see you. It is facebook.com/strongwriter. I say it like that because I don't want to spell it out. Okay, guys, please put your best pen forward, be a strong writer, and we'll see you next time. Been great talking to you. Take care, and we'll see you next Friday. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Strong Writer on the Radio with your host, Dean Olson, on the Amazing Women and Men of Power, the world's leading positive programming network powered by Raven International.